How'd last week go? If people have feedback on that, was that an acceptable method of content delivery for you all? Still feel like you're able to grasp everything okay through those recordings? No major issues there? Okay, good. A little concerned about that, as you guys have seen, though I record lectures, I don't really constrain myself to the fact that I'm recording. So when you're watching recorded lectures from previous semesters, you may miss out on a few things when I walk up and say, well, this thing here goes over here and this thing does this through the recording, that it's a bit lost. Fortunately, at least one of the recordings from last week was one where I was also on travel that year and was recording sitting in a hotel room. So that one was a little bit more careful about that. But the first couple were in-class lectures. So curious, but everybody, no comments? People feel they will understand everything? Okay.
Sometimes when students ask a question, I can't hear the question in the background, but I can hear the answer.
I'm not careful enough about that. That's a good point. I need to be more careful about that. But yeah, I'm aware. Constantly remind myself and then immediately forget to do that. I'll try to do better on that. All right, great. We're going to come in. Everybody's going to tell me. Didn't learn anything from that. That's a terrible method. It's not how we want to do things. But if you learn it all, then okay, well, we'll move on. And actually type anything up. But I believe there's no class on Friday for fall break. Is that correct? Okay. If that's the case, we won't have a homework due this week. I will take probably one problem related to last week's lectures and just have it due next Friday along with the homework for next Friday. So you expect that one to be maybe a little bit longer, not quite double since it's out of town. We'll de-emphasize those lectures a little bit and then we have a partial week this week. But so we won't have anything due until a week from this Friday for homeworks. Yeah. Yeah, so I'll try to get at least the part that has to do with last week's lectures posted after class, and I'll try to just get the whole thing posted today, depending on how far we get in lecture. Any other questions, concerns? Yeah. I don't know. What do you guys want to do?
How much harder is it?
Different types of hard. The question there was how much harder is it if it's take home? I'm trying. The answer is they're just different kinds of hard. I don't try to make one or the other harder or easier. Right? So if it's in class, you've got a limited amount of time. Take home, you have as much time as you want. I'll try to make them test the same level of thought. Things need to be constrained a little bit more in class. You've seen from kind of the progression of the homework. So, you know, I try to do similar things on the exams to what I do on the homework. I do like to require a little bit of thought in terms of design beyond just solving things. With like this boost converter design that we had homework ago. So I have to figure out ways for an interim in-class exam to constrain that. Likely for the content of this course, we'd be looking at either an evening session rather than using a class period or scheduling that outside of class or try to find a way to fit it into 50 minutes. That one will be more of a rush for you guys. I'll try to scale down so that it's doable in that amount of time.
Yeah. Originally, you had a tentative schedule for October 29th for that midterm with the Atlanta conference, the Food First or second are your travels. You know if that's changed at all to the date for the schedule midterm?
No. So the tentative date is still October 29th, and we'll nail it down a couple of weeks in advance of that. So I'm going to get through some of the things that we're going to talk about today and probably through one or two more topics before we schedule the midterm. So we have everything there. So you guys can think about it. We'll nail down a date and time for that sufficiently far in advance. Kind of leave it open because I want to get through a certain amount of content before we have the exam, and that waxes and wanes by a week depending on how fast we're moving through things in lecture. Yeah.
Roger.
Yeah. Like we'll really start getting going on that after the midterm. The specifications will come out in the next couple of weeks. Part of it is I want to get through. That's going to be some converter design. I want to get through a little bit more, starting with what we'll talk about today on different topologies, make use of some of the phenomena that we've been talking about so far in class. Now that we've built up the tools for the analysis of resonant transitions, what are the types of converters that really use these to great benefit? Prior to doing that, I think it's much to ask you to pick a topology for a design. So we've gone over some more of them. Any other questions or concerns? Okay. Let's hop in. So what we're going to begin talking about today is the kind of loose grouping of topologies. And when you start really trying to classify topologies, it becomes a hazy process, because I can call this topology some derivative of a PWM converter, but I could also call it a reduction of a resonant converter, an extension of a switch capacitor converter. So all these lines are pretty hazy. I'm going to call generally what we're talking about AC link topologies. That's not a formally defined term, just the way I refer to these things. Again, if you really press on it, you'll find that this overlaps with other things and that really you could classify any converter in the same way I'm going to drive this. But just kind of the rough idea of these is that it's going to be a class of topologies which can be segmented into, for DC to DC conversion, DC at the input, DC at the output, and somewhere in the middle it's going to go to purely AC. Okay. We've got a VG source at the input, I've got some load with an output power P out and a DC voltage V. And I'm going to somehow build a converter to accomplish some voltage conversion between VG and V by implementing three stages. So I'm going to put in a DC to AC converter. I'll label this a high frequency HF inverter. Just to clarify, this isn't a 60 hertz type thing. This is a FS, hundreds of kilohertz, megahertz type switching stage that is going to produce an output generally called VP, which is some AC voltage. Square wave, perhaps multi-level, perhaps resonant sinusoidal. But somehow that's going to do inversion at high frequency. Then somewhere at the output, I'm going to put in a rectifier to get back to DC. Here's my AC-DC rectifier. call the AC input voltage VS. P and S generally for the primary and secondary, we'll use them even if we don't have something like a transformer in the middle. And then in the middle, what I'm going to have is some passive network. It's made up of inductors, capacitors, and possibly transformers. And I can get very similar behaviors for the same passive network with different types of inverters and rectifiers. The converter will behave essentially the same, but only the switches, the stresses on the switching devices will change. And I can get very different behaviors by switching around passive network of different numbers and configuration of elements. But essentially, I can take these things and I can analyze them in similar manners. So I might have, just as some examples, for my high frequency inverter, things like a full bridge using four MOSFETs, outputs two level square waves VP from the input. I might want to reduce my device count, instead use something like a half bridge. Which would have, here I can switch between zero and plus and minus VG and generate pure AC. With the half bridge, I can go between zero and the input voltage. I may need something like a DC blocking cap. Give me a pure AC waveform for VP. Do things like a three-level half bridge, four devices in series, capacitor across it, one from VG. And potentially needing blocking capacitor, CDC just indicating preferentially large valued capacitors. Or I can do something like a push-pull with a center tap transformer, many other permutations. So here just as three possible examples, all of which will eventually generate me an AC modulated voltage here. It may be pure two level square wave, maybe multiple levels. Somehow I'm doing that high frequency inversion. For the rectifier, I'll have similar kinds of things. I have simple two diode rectifier going from VS to VOUT. Things like a full bridge. I can have things like a center tapped rectifier. I can replace any of these diodes with MOSFETs to have active type rectifiers that are maybe lower conduction loss due to getting rid of the forward voltage. Do things like semi-active rectifiers where instead of a full bridge of synchronous devices, I mix diodes and active devices. Yes. But all of these are going to serve to do my rectification of an AC signal to my output. In general, if, let's just take this top one as an example, I have a big DC blocking cap at the output. It means my VF is going to be some square wave voltage. If I put a large inductor instead, then what I'm going to see at this port is going to be a square wave current where this inductor maintains a constant current. I should, that's a bad one to draw it on. A full bridge would have been better. But one thing you'll need to be careful of, that's likely to show up on homework problems and others, is what's actually loading this rectifier. I put a DC cap at the output and then have some rectifier. I can say the output voltage is going to be clamped if that's a large filter element. And as I rectify back, I should see a square wave of voltage here. If I load that by something that looks like a constant current source, then I'm going to maintain constant current. It's going to be a voltage that drives it. It's going to reflect back a constant current. In any event, to pick some topology to implement this rectifier. And then for my passive network, I can have any number of passive elements that give me some different characteristics of this converter. Perhaps the simplest commonly used way to do this passive network would just be a series inductor. Just having that one element there would mean that I'm looking at a non-resonant type passive network. The one inductor, there's no resonant frequency of that. Still may have resonance in my switching transition, but I'm going to have linear intervals when I've got a fixed voltage here and here. The non-resonant implementation. And then common implementations here would be series resonant. Tank consists of a series LC, where they're designed to such that the resonant frequency of these two elements is at or near the switching frequency of the converter, which will give me significant resonance throughout my switching period. Different implementation, commonly referred to as parallel, is actually usually implemented like this. A parallel resonant tank, even though input to output these devices, this L and C, aren't directly in parallel, the reason for that is typically we're using, I guess all three of the ones that I drew are voltage source type inverters, which means in this comment here about we can have either current loaded or voltage loaded, all three of these have a strong voltage source at the input and are going to generate a voltage here, which is VG zero minus VG. Somehow it's enforcing a voltage at VP. If I put a capacitor across that, I'm just causing a bunch of issues, causing a bunch of loss when I short the voltage source to the capacitor. I often wouldn't want parallel LNC. If I did, I would need to make somehow this a current source here instead of a voltage source. I don't like to short a cap to a voltage source. It's going to cause a bunch of loss. Okay. And a final, very common one is series resonant with then a shunt inductor. Which is known as LLC. even if I haven't covered in class, many of you have probably heard talk of this from different products or research papers. LFE is a very common tank. It has some of the characteristics of a series resonant, but adding this shunt inductance gives a little bit of extra current, which can be advantageous for soft switching type behaviors. And again, just a subset of possibilities here. Many converters with significantly more complex tanks, I may put in some number of harmonic filters, show up as different LC pairs, improve the waveform for the passive network, particularly at very high frequency applications. Okay. So we're gonna look in the coming lectures at a few different topologies that fall into this class. The first one is going to be a dual active bridge. I'm just going to have a simple non-resonant tank and full bridges in the primary and secondary, kind of the simplest implementation of this AC link type topology classification. Generally, there are multiple ways to analyze these converters, and we'll apply what we've developed, state plane analysis, heavily. So the non-resonant version, the non-resonant interval state plane is not going to give us a lot, but if we want to look very specifically at soft switching type behaviors, look at the output capacitance of the devices, state plane analysis will be useful. To move forward to the resonant type series and parallel, state plane is going to be more straightforward in its application, because I'm going to have converters with 1L, 1C in the tank. That's state plane is designed for that. You go to the LLC, you have some concerns. Depending on how you design this, state plane analysis may not be applicable. So I've got significant resonance happening with both LP and LS at the same time. I can't reduce this down to a 1L, 1C circuit, and the state plane analysis that we've developed is not going to be very useful. I think I've mentioned offhand before, you can generalize it to multi-resonance. It loses a lot of its appeal because you start to get both ellipsoid type behavior and, depending on how you design it, the trajectory where you've got one arc with a circle spinning around it as you go, so you get like a spirograph type thing. Either of those, you don't get a lot of use from sketching the state plane then, because you can't just say, oh, this angle is the arctan of 2 over J, right? So depending on how you design it, that may be the case. Oftentimes with this LLC, it's designed in such a way that one of these inductors is much bigger than the other. So the actual resonance going on, usually LP is significantly larger than LS. So the resonance is all here. During that resonance, this looks like a current source. Then you can reduce down and apply state plane by approximating this as just the current source. Okay. So this kind of class of converters, I'm going to look at a simple implementation that is going to be the ultimate converter. So I want to have the best converter to ever exist that can do some voltage conversion in a way that is simple and intuitive and minimizes stresses on my devices and can be highly efficient. Okay. So if I wanted to do that, how might I start? So I've got some difference here. At this point, it's arbitrary, but let's say the output voltage is much lower than the input. I want to have a large step down, and I want to implement some power converter to do that. We've moved beyond 481, and you're now in an advanced grad course. Think about more complex topologies. Let's start by saying, well, a buck is the simplest thing to look at. So we can think about, okay, more conceptually, how might I want to do this voltage conversion? Okay. So if I've got a large difference between input and output, your intuition from previous classes would say, okay, a P PWM type voltage conversion isn't going to be a great option. If I have a buck or a tuke or a septic, any kind of non-isolated converter, and I am doing this voltage conversion by pushing my duty cycle to an extreme, that converter is going to suffer. In those extreme ends of duty cycles, I have to push a lot of power through in a small amount of time. It's going to be high peak stresses. It's going to cause a lot of loss. So what I want to do is somehow incorporate elements that'll do this voltage conversion for me, so I'm not forcing that all on the switches. I'd like to use a transformer. A transformer does a great job of stepping voltages up and down. So I'm going to take a transformer and I'm going to put it in the middle here. I'm going to say this is more or less an ideal one to end transformer. And I'm going to have that transformer do all of my voltage conversion for me. I'm going to design it so that the conversion I want, V over VG, which is my conversion ratio, is equal to the turns ratio of the transformer. A little bit off vertically. A little bit off. Okay, and then I'll just hook this up. Well, fine. I hook a transformer up to DC. It's going to immediately saturate and the currents are going to go to infinity. That's not going to work. So then what I'm going to do is I'm going to throw in a number of switches on either side that'll allow me to invert the input voltage, generate a square wave so that I'm applying only AC to this transformer, and then rectify it back. Throw in my inverter. Let's say for the moment this is just a full bridge. And a rectifier. Which is also a full bridge. And I hook this all up. I'm going to sketch quickly my waveforms VP and VS. Over one switching period, so VP. I'm going to just do 50% duty cycle right in the middle. Go between VG and minus VG. My inverter is going to switch with the pattern to generate that waveform. That's going to reflect through the transformer and give me a VS. That is, I said if this is a step down case, something like this, or VS is NVG and minus NVG, reflecting through the transformer, and things will make sense. Because I designed this transformer to do all of the voltage step down, that NVG is my output voltage. So if this is just a full bridge switching back and forth, I'll see V and then minus V applied to VS. Okay, so good. I'm gonna look at currents. IP and IS. What would those be? So, if I've done a good job, if I've got a constant DC output voltage with the current I out flowing through it, then when I have this rectifier connected in a positive polarity, such that I have V applied back, that current will go straight through, and IS will be equal to I out. When I flip it, IS will be equal to negative I out. So I'll have I out minus I out, and that'll reflect back through the transformer and give me an input current IP, which is, I think it should get small. What? 10 times I out minus N times I out. Should be. And if E over VG is equal to N, balancing powers between the input and output means that N times I out has to be equal to IG, so this is just IG. And we have just created the ultimate converter. Why do I say that? Well, I'm able to run all the switches at 50% duty cycle. So I'm going to share stresses equally among all these switches. And what are they stressed to? Well, each of these switches is stressed to the theoretical minimum voltage and current that I can do. Okay. So all of the switches here at the input see at most the input current and at most the input voltage, or voltage and current stresses. Something has to see the input voltage and the input current if I'm going to have switches there, right? I have some other topologies, put boost in there, I might have something that sees the output voltage and the input current, which is bad. I got the higher voltage and the higher current. But here, all of these things just see input voltage and input current. All of these things just see output voltage and output current. Transformer does all the work, and I can design this transformer to be very efficient, hopefully. I need to further investigate switching behavior. So saying I've got the minimum voltage and current stresses kind of implies, okay, conduction losses should be fairly good. I don't have any higher currents than whatever I need to get the power through. I haven't talked about switching losses yet. We'll get to those in the next few slides. But before we get there, there is one problem with this converter, and that's that it won't work. The only reason it's not the perfect converter, it's completely non-functional as is. And the reason for that, it's back to what you guys were listening to recorded me talk about last week, which is that in any real transformer, I'm going to have some amount of leakage inductance, call it LP, I'll just draw it on the primary here. I use any kind of real physical implementation of this transformer, I'll have at minimum some inductance there. I can't get rid of it. No matter how good of a design I do, there'll be some left over. And now if I look at, okay, what is the voltage on that inductor? VL. Well, as I've drawn these waveforms, VP and VF, just scale by the turns ratio. So if I reflect VS back on the right side of the inductor here, what I get is a waveform equal in amplitude and wave shape to VP, which means I have zero voltage on this inductance always. VL looks like this. I put 0 volts on an inductor, that means I have 0 dI/dt, which means these waveforms are wrong. In fact, what I have is just 0 current the whole time and no power flow. This implies these waveforms won't happen. I won't have this if I put an inductor over there, I won't have this instantaneous DIDT that just has zero current always. So in order to get this to work, I need to somehow put some voltage on that inductor in order to establish a current through it. And one way I can do that is by slightly shifting the square wave on the secondary with respect to the square wave on the primary. I'm going to take these same two waveforms that I've drawn here for VP and VS, and I'm going to shift VS over a little bit. I'll say, let's take some amount of time that I'll call phi and shift this VS waveform over. Should be effectively using an active type full bridge where I have MOSFET devices and control their switching, shifting them over. If I do that, again, reflect this VS back. During this phase shift interval, I'll get a big voltage across the inductor. VG minus negative VG as I reflect it back through. I'll get a voltage on this inductor that looks like 2 VG and the same thing during the second half. This time, that phase shift interval, then during the rest of the period, I still have 0 volts on it. So this is going to slightly degrade my waveform, but I can still make them pretty good. So my currents, instead of being these nice perfect square waves, which the output only is stressed to the output current, the input is only stressed to the input current, they're going to have a ramping interval. Let's just draw IP. IP is now going to look like this. During that phase shift interval, I'll ramp up the slope 2 VG over LP. Because I am not always sitting at a level value, spending the entire period either plus or minus input and output current, I'm going to have to go a little bit higher to deliver the same amount of power, which means my stresses are going to now be a little bit higher than the theoretical minimum. So IP would go up to something a little bit above the average input current. If I can make this time small, then I can have just a little bit above and approach theoretical minimum stresses. So it harms me a little bit in terms of stresses in my converter. I'm sacrificing something there. Having this inductance is actually going to benefit me in terms of obtaining soft switching, zero voltage switching type transitions, and gives me some control of this thing. The original one that I drew, it would just be a pure DC transformer. This thing now, by controlling the phase shift, I can regulate the amount of power going through it. So it gives me a control variable. Okay. So I titled this idea of DC transformer or DCX. Concept behind this DC transformer is creating a converter that emulates the behavior of this theoretical concept of a DC transformer. Obviously, we can't have a true DC transformer windings and magnetics. What we can do is have a converter which has fixed conversion ratio, which integrates transformer type conversion, but has active elements in order to prevent saturation. DC transformer doesn't necessarily need to be this topology. I can use one of the other tanks, some other implementations of inverter and rectifier, something that's designed to target a single conversion ratio and do so very efficiently. This specific implementation is known as the dual active bridge converter, which we're going to discuss in a little bit more detail. So here's just the implementation of that, where I've got full bridges on the primary and secondary. In the middle, I've got a transformer with either purely its own leakage inductance, or for design reasons, I may supplement this and actually add a physical inductor in series, which we'll get into why you might want to do that. This thing has been extremely popular in both research and implementation, because it is so close to this ideal converter. It's got near minimum possible stresses, and also by incorporating this inductance, I can get zero voltage switching of all eight devices, really small switching losses, really small conduction losses because I don't have high peak current stresses. Been real popular in recent years because it was invented 25, 30 years ago, and the patents expired about 5 or 6 years ago. Getting used more. Okay. In large part, narrow conversion ratio applications, where, well, narrow voltage swing applications. It does really well. You'll notice here I talked about, okay, is the voltage conversion ratio being equal to the transformer turns ratio. When you're close to that, this thing really excels. If this deviates, can still do well. It's a lot more effort. You have to change around how you switch things. So with the transformer, I can do a very large conversion ratio. This thing will struggle a little bit more if it's variable conversion ratio, if it changes much away from that, because you're going to have to pick this, right? When you design it, you've got one N. So if M's changing around, you're no longer going to have this be true. And the further you get away from that, the harder it is to maintain soft switching type behaviors, and your current voltage stresses will go up. So very popular in a lot of applications with high conversion ratio, but relatively narrow variation in the input and output voltages, or ability to tolerate some variation. A lot of work that looks at composite type converters, where if I have a conversion ratio which could be between 50 and 100, maybe I do a conversion ratio of 75 and then a buck boost afterwards, because this thing can be so efficient, two converters in series may still be a better option. This handles the front of the conversion ratio. Something else does the regulation. It's popular across EVs, a lot of them in solid-state transformers, so there's things in that direction for utility applications, power supplies for data centers, being some kind of intermediate bus converter, anything else. Okay, by the same token, there is a magnetizing inductance, of course. It'll be part and parcel to this transformer. Often, given the stresses on this thing, you can make that large enough so that it's negligible in the circuit operation. That's much more simple than making the leakage inductance zero. Make the magnetizing inductance 100 times larger than the leakage, so that over one period, develop negligible amount of current through that magnetizing path. So normally that can be neglected. So we won't focus on that. Okay. So here is showing a bit more detail of some switching waveforms of this thing, similar to what we just drew. And my VP and VS are here in the middle. VP going minus VG to VG, VS going minus V out to V out, and some phase shift between them. During that phase shift time, I ramp up the inductor current, and then because, assuming the turns ratio matched the voltage conversion ratio, my inductor current's flat during the non-phase shift intervals. So I then look at the output current here, prior to any kind of cap or filtering. So the real implementation, I would need some kind of output filtering. Looking at the current here actually coming out of the power stage before that cap, this blue line on the bottom. it looks like a rectified version of the inductor current. I've drawn the inductor on the primary, also scaled by the turns ratio. But it follows the inductor current over kind of the second half of this, same shape. And then it's the negative of it during the first half. When the inductor's negative, it gets rectified to positive. When it's positive, it stays positive. The only difference is these phase shift intervals that'll cause some pulsation of the alpha current. The existence of this pulsation in the alpha current is really the dual of what I was talking about earlier. If this thing could produce just a constant alpha current, it would have the minimum stresses. Because I'm pulsing it a little bit, these peaks will have to be a little bit higher than the average, such that when I average over one full period, I still get whatever current I want. I need some higher peak to make up for this amount of negative current that goes to the output. Okay. This thing, as with most of these AC link topologies, is going to exhibit half period symmetry, which means waveforms will all repeat around one switching period like every other converter. So it's symmetric about one switching period, but if I look at half of that period, I'll just pick this half when the input voltage is positive. See is that the waveforms are also symmetric about a half period, so in a certain way, all of the DC waveforms at the input and output will be just symmetric about a half period. The I out has the shape where it's high and then drops down. Half period before, it's high and then drops down. Does the same thing in each half period. Because it's out on the DC side. In the middle, everything is going to be half cycle anti-symmetric, which means IL kind of high then drops down in what I've sketched here. The half period before, it's low and then ramps up. Exact same dynamic, same shape, just reflected across zero. I flip this, the same thing. Okay. Across the half period, all DC waveforms symmetric. All AC waveforms are anti-symmetric. So in general, I can just look at a half period and then mirror effectively for the other half to get an analysis of a full period of operation. Okay. Here, since my tank is just an inductor, I don't have significant resonance going on. The place that resonance and state plane analysis will come up is not drawn on these waveforms, but during these switching times, I will need some dead time. And when I actually go to analyze that, I'll have some capacitance of the primary full bridge, some capacitance of the secondary full bridge that'll interact with the tank, causing some resonant type circuit. Okay. These waveforms are all for just ideal switching devices, zero dead time, switch instantaneously, no capacitance. So if I wanted to analyze that case with ideal switching devices, be a little bit different than some of the traditional PWM topologies, but still something I expect you guys could sort out, no problem. Okay? So you'd have to kind of average over this output current, get what the average power is, it depend on what my ramp rate is, what my phase shift is, be 2VG over L times TC, depending on how long that is, dictate how high my current goes, and you could average over the whole thing to get the average output, fine. What you would not be able to do is apply any kind of 481 type analysis where you say small ripple average over the individual elements. And it's generally true of all of these AC link topologies because now you have a link here that's purely AC. If you apply small ripple type analysis to this thing that has purely AC waveforms, the DC, once you average away all that AC that you're going to get is zero, and the thing just will do nothing in that analysis. Okay? You won't be able to apply that type of analysis. You can do averaging the input and output on the DC side, but in the middle, can't. Okay. So we're not going to go through a solution of this with ideal switching devices. Instead, what we're going to do is insert what behavior is going to come up when I consider the actual output capacitance of the devices. And then we'll have for inductor current, primary side voltage, secondary side voltage, something similar to the trapezoid and square wave that I had before. But now I'm going to have these resonant intervals where the inductor current is resonating with the output capacitance of my switching devices. Okay. And because I'm out of time, we're going to stop there. We'll go through and analyze on the state plane what's happening in this converter next class. Interesting thing will be I've got a switching transition where I resonate with the primary side bridge and a switching transition where I resonate with the secondary side bridge. In general, particularly if this is a high step-down converter, I probably have different devices on the primary, some high voltage devices on the primary, low voltage devices on the secondary with different capacitances. Which means I've got different resonant frequencies, different R-naughts, and these are going to be two different state planes normalized independently going on at the same time in this converter. Okay. We'll look at that on Wednesday. All through. Thanks, guys.